Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
You either have grace or you don't.
Read Grace's work in The Spectator and see her recommended reading at gracecurleyshow.com.
She's got to take a drug test. There's no way somebody can act that way and be normal.
Now, here's the millennial with the mic.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley, host of the Grace Curley Show.
Grace. Grace Curley.
Grace!
We are back on the Grace Curley Show. Thanks for being with us. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, sitting in for Grace. And the theme of today's show is that Democrat politicians are lying to you. And one of the liars, the lying liars, who is in, I guess he's in office right now. I was going to say he's in power, but he has no power, is a man by the name of Hakeem Jeffries. Hakeem Jeffries right now is in the middle of a government shutdown. He's in the middle of a shutdown because Democrats are refusing to vote to fund the government with a clean continuing resolution. That's what they're unwilling to do. Now, they're lying and saying that it's Republicans who have shut down the government. And we can go through all the reasons why that could or could not be true. But it's unnecessary to do that in this environment. Right now, we can just know that Hakeem Jeffries is a liar. So he goes on Face the Nation with Margaret Brennan, and he actually expects that he's going to get it let off pretty easy because they're not accustomed to being asked hard questions. And I actually have to, for once, give Margaret Brennan a little credit, just a little, for actually kind of confronting him with his own words. Cut number 10.
You said Democrats, there are no election deniers on our side of the aisle. You said that back in January. But recently, you've been using the term rigged elections in reference to the upcoming midterms. Democrats were appalled when President Trump used language like that. How do you justify using that now? Doesn't that undermine faith for voters? You need to show up.
No, I've been using that term in the context of Donald Trump's unprecedented effort to gerrymander congressional maps in a partisan fashion all across the country in order to rig the midterm elections and deny the ability of the American people to actually decide who should be in the majority as it relates to the House of Representatives.
You know, Democrats are also going through gerrymandering and redistricting.
No. Well, Democrats are going to push back aggressively to make sure that we have fair maps across the country, not partisan gerrymandering, which Republicans have initiated in state after state after state.
Now, I don't think that Hakeem Jeffries is used to being called out for his words that are lies, for saying that, oh, there are no Democrats who are election deniers. She goes, well, what about the fact you're talking about people rigging the election? He goes, oh, well, that's because Trump's doing it. That's because Trump's doing it. So that makes it okay. And actually, the gerrymandering is being done by Republicans, which I want to tackle that claim right now. Let's just tackle it head on. Republicans did not start the process of gerrymandering. Now, what Hakeem Jeffries expected was someone like Margaret Brennan was going to carry the water for the left and defend them and not fill everyone in on the history of it. He must have thought that he was giving an interview with Jake Tapper. Now, listen to the same conversation about gerrymandering happened between Jake Tapper and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold Schwarzenegger, former Republican governor of California, pushing back against Democrat gerrymandering in California. Here you have Jake Tapper doing what Hakeem Jeffries thought he was going to get from Margaret Brennan. He's arguing that gerrymandering is only what Republicans do. Cut 23.
As you acknowledged, this all started because of redistricting in Texas, and this was Trump pushing Republican-controlled states to throw out their current congressional maps so as to cook the books, so that it is less likely for Democrats to retake control of the House during the next year midterms. I mean, is it fair to argue do you believe that the Republican Party is starting this?
No, Jake. There has been gerrymandering going on for 200 years. There is such extreme gerrymandering going on that in a state like Massachusetts, that has like 40% of the people voting for Trump, they have zero representatives. The Republican Party has zero representatives sent to the House. Think about that. In New Mexico, 45% of the people voted for Trump and voted Republican, and zero is sent to the House, zero representative from the Republican Party. So there's gerrymandering, crazy gerrymandering, going on all over the country, And we wanted to try to stop it in California. And we did stop it in California. And we went around the country. So I think this whole thing about finger pointing and saying they did it, so therefore we should be doing it, that's not really the way to go. The one party should outperform the other party. It should be performance. And when it comes to midterm elections, as you know, always the party that is not in the White House usually wins by 20, 25, 30 seats. So what does 5 seats matter in the first place in Texas? It is crazy. Yeah. They should outperform them. That is what the way the action is.
Now, I don't often quote Arnold Schwarzenegger, but he's like, Jake, you're crazy and this is ridiculous. It's not about who did it first. Democrats have always engaged in gerrymandering. And in a midterm wave election, you're saying it's going to be a blue wave coming next year in 2026 because it's the midterms. They should get 25, 30 seats if they're going to outperform. The fact that 5 seats in Texas is going to all of a sudden put our democracy at risk as an existential threat when places like New England, we all know it. We know it here in New England. We know how many people in Massachusetts voted for Donald Trump, and we know that there are zero Republicans serving for Massachusetts in the House of Representatives. We know exactly how gerrymandering works. We know how it works in Illinois. We know how it works in every Democrat state. And so he calls it out. And that's what these people are not used to doing, being called out for their BS. But Akeem Jeffries also just assumes that he blames it on Trump, that he's not going to be held to consistency. There's the old saying, right? Consistency is the hobgoblin of feeble minds. Oh, why, Margaret? You expect me to be consistent? He doesn't expect to be called out. And that's also where we are when it comes to his embrace of Mamdani. I don't know if you all saw that this weekend, I think it was yesterday, that there was this rally that Zohran Mamdani was doing at his major studio, major stadium. I think in Queens. And it was packed. It was packed. And Kathy Hochul comes out and she addresses the group. And you can tell not a single one of them care that she's there. She's the sitting governor. She's on their side. And it was so awkward because she's awkward. She's not authentic. And this is supposed to be like authenticity. But then she has to go and she has to try to find out lines that they're going to resonate with the crowd. And she keeps trying to find ways. And so she ends up saying that Zohran Mamdani is the future. She also kind of berates them and says to them, you've never voted before. You never voted before. You never turned out. And so what I really need, I need you to support Zohran, but you're already going to do that anyway. So what I really need you to do is turn out in 2026 and help us take back America, take back the House, take back America. Now, AOC was also there and she screamed like a lunatic and that resonated with the crowd. But Kathy Hochul was there and she was really out of place. They didn't like her. They started to boo her at various times. But it was the insincerity, the fact that there is this civil war going on in these two different warring factions. And Kathy Hochul and Akeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer are part of the old guard. But they're trying to figure out how to appeal to the new guard. And so you have them doing this like kind of hostage, held at gunpoint endorsements of Zohran Mamdani. And they have to figure out why. Now, my hypothesis for why Akeem Jeffries has waited so long to endorse him is because he's friends with Andrew Cuomo. He was one of the last people to push Andrew Cuomo out when he had all of his scandals as governor of New York. And they didn't care that he was killing old people in nursing homes during COVID. They only cared when he got Me Too'd, right? But Akeem Jeffries stood by him even during then. But here's what the lying liar Akeem Jeffries had to say about why he waited so long to endorse Mamdani. Cut 11.
In New York City, city of more than 8 million people, there's about to be an election of a new mayor. You waited until this Friday, the day before early voting began, to endorse the Democratic Socialist candidate Zohran Mamdani. Why did you wait so long?
As I indicated, last several weeks, we've been immersed in the intensity around the government shutdown and the run-up to that in advance of September 30th and the expiration of the fiscal year. But I support the Democratic nominee, as I indicated, and we're in alignment in terms of the issue related to affordability and the need to address it decisively for the city of New York. And of course, affordability is an issue for people all across the country.
Immersed in the issue around the shutdown. What do you mean immersed? Like, what are you actually doing with respect to the shutdown? You're not engaged in any negotiations with the White House. The House is out of session. What do you mean immersed in there's nothing taking your attention away from it other than the cosplay and the protests and the signaling and the trying to appeal to your base. Like, what? We are immersed in the issues related to the shutdown. That's why I couldn't have endorsed him sooner. Oh, yeah. And we're in alignment on affordability. What does that even mean? Does it mean anything? It's all BS. It's all posturing. None of it's real. None of it's legitimate. There was no reason that you couldn't have endorsed Mamdani if you actually thought he was good for New York. You were afraid. You were afraid that his policies are dangerous. Why don't you just say it? Say it. Why don't you tell us? Now, what's interesting is that Hakeem Jeffries, as I said, was a longtime friend of Andrew Cuomo. He was one of the last people to call on him to resign. Here's a flashback from when that happened. Cut 12.
As we reported earlier, Governor Cuomo today said these people calling for him to step down are part of cancel culture, that they don't know the facts.
He'll say whatever he needs to say to defend himself. But when you have both sitting United States senators, more than half the legislative legislators in Albany calling for your resignation, that's sending a signal. The one person I am watching, Judy, is Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, who's a rising star within the Democratic Party. Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, who was a House impeachment manager, very, very close to Governor Cuomo. If he loses Hakeem Jeffries, then you know he's gone.
Once he loses Hakeem Jeffries, you know he's gone. So basically, Hakeem Jeffries always waits too long. He waits till the verdict is in. He's the last one. He's not the canary in the coal mine. He's the last one that will go down with the ship. He also was a big cheerleader of bringing Andrew Cuomo back and having him run. He encouraged him to get in. This is Hakeem Jeffries in February saying that Andrew Cuomo would be a great candidate for mayor. Cut 13.
Would it be good for New York if he did?
I think he'd be a candidate that a lot of people, as I've heard from the district that I represent, would be very interested in checking out.
So why don't you just say that? Why don't you just say that? Why don't you say that the reason I didn't endorse Mamdani had nothing to do with being immersed in the issues related to the shutdown, which we all know you're doing nothing. You're doing nothing on the shutdown. And why are you doing nothing? You told us from the beginning. You told us from the beginning that bills are going to go out on November 1st and you want to wait until the Obamacare exchange is open because people will be mad when they see their premiums go up and you think that will create political leverage for you. You know that people are going to be mad that are receiving benefits when the benefits get turned off on November 1st. That's why you're waiting. But the reason why you couldn't do it is because you don't agree with Mamdani on policy. You like Andrew Cuomo. He's your boy. He's your friend. You want him to rehabilitate his career. You thought that Andrew Cuomo was better. Whatever. Just be honest. Just be honest with the American people. The American people will forgive you for anything. They'll forgive you for being wrong. They'll forgive you for backing the wrong person, but only if you tell them the truth. And that's why I think it's so dangerous and so damaging for right now, this moment, that the Democrats are focusing on fear. They're not focusing on truth. They're focusing on getting you to be afraid, and they're conforming to very, very dangerous ideals. And in the words of James Carville, cut 22.
I'm one scared dude, really scared.
I mean, that's where we are with these Democrats. This is The Grace Curley Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne.
More of The Grace Curley Show up next. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne. Thanks for being with us. I got to hear that Charlemagne sound cut again, because this is him saying, why am I going to believe, Jamie Harrison, you were the chair of the DNC, I'm not going to believe anything you tell us. Cut one.
It's just hard to believe y'all, Jamie, now, simply because we know what y'all watched the last 4 years. Even when I see somebody like Corinne Jean-Pierre come out with her book, and I'm like, You sat up there and lied for him all of this time, and now you want to be honest you're an independent, and it's the same. All of y'all did that for the last 4 years.
Charlemagne, I ain't lie about a damn thing.
Well, you ain't tell the truth.
Well, what?
You just kept quiet.
Okay. Don't let him talk to you like that, Jamie.
No, come on, man.
Don't let him talk to you like that, Jamie. I didn't lie. Well, you didn't tell the truth. I think good for Charlamagne for calling them out, because I think that's exactly what needs to happen. And that is the topic of today's poll question, which is brought to you by Tux Trucks. The snowflakes are coming and the snowflakes are coming. Push them away with a Fisher plow from Tux Trucks GMC in Hudson, Mass. Tux Trucks has the full line of Fisher products, including parts, and they service Fisher plows. Learn more at TuxTrucksGMC.com. Taylor, what is today's poll question, and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at GraceCurlyShow.com, is who is the biggest liar in Dem politics today? Kamala Harris, KJP, Hakeem Jeffries, Adam Schiff, Chuck Schumer, or Elizabeth Warren?
I mean, we all know about Elizabeth Warren, but is she the biggest at the moment? Probably not. Hakeem and Chuck are both liars. If you look at what they're doing, Chuck lies about everything. He just wants to be in the spotlight. Hakeem, I just went through why he's a liar. Kamala, awful. KJP, terrible. And she has no regrets. No regrets. But Shifty Adam Schiff, I still think, takes the cake.
40% say Schiff, 23% say Schumer, 16% for Elizabeth Warren, 11% for Hakeem Jeffries, 6% for KJP, and only 4% for Kamala Harris.
One liar I wanted to get to was Graham Plattner. He's that candidate for U.S. Senate running against Janet Mills to hope to take on Susan Collins. And here's the thing. He's been saying that he didn't know. He didn't know what his tattoo was. He's not a secret Nazi. He didn't know that there was a Nazi thing. And guess what?
I was never a Nazi. I was much too young.
That would be a good song for his campaign. I think that is largely his slogan. But listen to how CNN's continued investigation shows that he continues to lie. Cut 28.
Well, Dana, we found old Reddit posts from Graham Plattner where he writes about the use of skull imagery in the military. Mm-hmm. It appeared on Reddit about the Totenkopf, which is the Nazi version of the skull and crossbones, and it looks a lot like the tattoo that Plattner had on his chest. Now, someone on the thread brings up the fact that some Navy SEALs use a so-called Punisher skull as their emblem, and later Graham Plattner, under the username P-Hustle, writes, quote, when I was in Ramadi in 06 as a Marine grunt, the SEAL platoon we worked closely with for the deployment all had the Punisher skull spray painted on their armor carriers. So what this means is that he was in a Reddit thread where they are talking about the Nazi skull Totenkopf and the fact that the U.S. military also used skulls. This was 6 years ago, and it definitely raises some questions about his statement last week that he didn't realize that this was a Nazi symbol until very recently.
It doesn't raise questions. It confirms he was lying. And there are a lot more posts where he talks about his familiarity with Nazi imagery, how he knows it, he defends it. But here's the thing. His new story, because he's running for Senate, is that he didn't know that's what it was. And if he had known, he would have had it removed. Now that's why he has a cover up and all this other stuff. He knew. And the real thing is that he's trying to defend it. And if his defense is, hey, because of these nuanced differences, you have to understand it, blah, blah, blah. That's really probably not something that tested well. It's not something that sold. So he went with, I didn't know, and had I known, I would have had it removed. No, he knew. And despite the fact that he knew that this was very close to Nazi imagery, he chose to have it. He brags that he knows more than anyone. You can't have it both ways. You're a liar. You're done. This is The Grace Curley Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio, it's The Grace Curley Show.
We're back at The Grace Curley Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, in for Grace. One of the texters wanted to know why Gavin Newsom wasn't included on the list of liars. And I think that's a very good point. Gavin Newsom also does like to lie. Of course, we know that he likes to dine out at the French Laundry while putting everyone else under lockdown, which is why I found it very interesting that he's decided, as he positions himself to run for president, he's decided that he's going to lean into this narrative of being like a kid that like grew up from nothing, rags to riches story. And I'm not going to question anything about his biography. I don't know Gavin Newsom's biography, but I think it's so funny that he's leaning in so heavily on being like a latchkey kid, on like really, you know, having to like bring him up by his own bootstraps. Let's hear a little bit. Cut number 16.
But also, you know, it was also about paying the bills, man. And it was just like hustling. Mm-hmm. And so I was out there kind of raising myself, turning on the TV, started, you know, just getting obsessed, you know, sitting there with the, you know, the Wonder Bread and five stacks of,
you know, like the White Stack Bob story.
Come on. Kraft macaroni and cheese.
Yeah. Man, hold up, good, man, bro. Yeah. Are you talking about me?
Young YG.
YG, but man, I knew
every
it.
Day,
I knew it.
Every day in the backyard, just bouncing the basketball, throwing the ball against the wall until the ball is just like fraying, man. And your
entertaining yourself.
Falling. That's it, whole thing. So just, and then, you know, then this student that was a student is in the back with his head down, all of a sudden started throwing the baseball a little faster than everyone else and started, you know, make a few free throws because I was sitting there practicing 500 of them every damn night. And in high school, I look up in the stands, my dad's back up there.
Okay, dope.
And it's like, man, and then he's bringing his friends and you're captain of the team and you're like, geez, you know, and it just saved me and it got me into college.
Now, I'm not going to take anything away from anyone in terms of their biography and their history and what they went through and what it took to get them to be where they are, because that's one thing. Now, his parents, if I'm not mistaken, I think they divorced when he was young. His dad was a lawyer and was well-connected. His mom, I think, ended up raising them. And so that could be the case. And then he had to, like, you know, basketball. But what he's doing is he's trying to find something that puts himself down and make himself lesser than them to give them the sense of humility. And if there's one thing that is not at all a characteristic of Gavin Newsom, it's relatability, authenticity, any sort of ability to relate to the human experience of the people that don't own several wineries, don't dine at French restaurant when or at French laundry when they're locking down the American people. He's trying to, you know, be self-deprecating. And this is the thing. Like, he gets asked the question, like, are you considering running for president? And we all know that not only is he considering it, he's actively running right now. He's been running. He was waiting in the wings in case Joe Biden had bowed out early. He didn't bow out early enough and he couldn't get past Kamala. So he gave it a pass. But he's running. He's running.
What's
now.
What's something that you always carry with you?
Hot sauce.
She's pandering to black people.
Is it working?
We know he's running for president. So he gets asked the question, are you running for president? And he kind of is coy. He says, I'll think about it after the midterm. So he doesn't deny that he's running, which is the same thing as saying that he's running. But then listen to like how he's self-deprecating because he's an elitist. He's self-aggrandizing. He's not humble. But this is how he tries to play it. Cut 17.
You're not afraid to go into red states.
No.
When I saw you slinging shots behind the coffee bar, I thought this guy might run for president.
I have no idea. The idea that a guy who got 960 on his SAT that still struggles to read scripts that was always in the back of the classroom, the idea that you even throw that out is in and of itself extraordinary. Who the hell knows? I'm looking forward to who presents themselves in 2028. And who meets that moment? And that's the question for the American people. They'll make that determination.
Is it fair to say, after the 2026 midterms, you're going to give it serious thought?
Yeah, I'd be lying otherwise. I'd just be lying. And I can't do that.
Governor, you have long said that if you ever run for the White House, you need a compelling why, a reason. Are you moving closer to figuring out your own why and your own decision?
Yeah, Nietzsche said, if you have a compelling why, you can endure any how. And so I don't think, I think the biggest challenge for anyone who runs for any office is people see right through you if you don't have that why. You're doing it for the wrong reasons. And so, look, well, that fate will determine that.
You certainly seem to like being on the ground in South Carolina, I have to say that. Seeing you up close, you were having a good time.
I happen to, and thank God, I'm in the right business. I love people. I actually love people.
He couldn't possibly lie. He wouldn't lie. He wouldn't lie about it. But yeah, he would. He would absolutely lie. So let's not fool ourselves. Like, he would absolutely lie about it. But He's so, oh, you see me slinging shots, but like wearing an apron behind an espresso counter, and you think maybe I'm running for something. You see me going to red states, you think I'm running for something. You are running for it. So stop it. Oh, it's just so, I can't believe that you would even think that, given the fact that I am doing everything that looks like it. Oh, it's just so flattering that you would say with someone that got a 960 on their SAT, which I'm guessing that's the old system out of what, 1600? Taylor, did you do well on the SATs?
I don't remember what I got. I have no idea. I think I did.
It was funny. When I was in college, like, there were a lot of people from the Midwest. They never took them. They took the ACTs, and I had never heard of the ACTs. Those standardized tests, they don't necessarily capture your aptitude. So I think, like, even using them, I think it's, like, his way of, like, trying to, like, you know, play down. Well, I'm just not a good test taker. Because you can always come back later, and they'd be like, oh, you're dumb. And no. It was just that I'm bad at standardized tests. Oh, think that someone that got a 960 on his SATs. Well, if you want to say, like, it's extraordinary that someone's that's low IQ, that's low authenticity, that's low anything positive for the United States of America would be considered as a candidate for president, then I agree with you, and I think that you're right. It is actually embarrassing that anyone would think that you would be a good candidate for the United States, for president of the United States of America. And so I'm willing to take that. There's something else funny about, like, this authenticity question and knowing everything else. There was this exchange that happened on, Scott Bessent made the rounds this weekend. He got pushback from Kristen Welker on Meet the Press. She was pushing him, and she wanted to talk about, like, why costs haven't come down and how inflation is up, and it's the highest it's been since January. But it was on one of the stations where I think with Martha Raddatz, where she wanted to push him on how difficult the Chinese trade wars have been on soybean farmers. And I didn't know this about him, but his response was fantastic. Cut number 25.
The president has also said he does want our farmers to be taken care of. You did mention that China has been boycotting American soybeans and American farmers have really suffered. Do you see a real light at the end of the tunnel there? They may allow soybeans again?
Well, Martha, in case you don't know it, I'm actually a soybean farmer, so I have felt this pain too. And there are a couple of things happening here. One, the Chinese have substantially dropped their purchases to almost zero, so they unfortunately have been using American farmers who are amongst President Trump's biggest supporters. I think he had more than 90% support. And then this was one of the biggest crops in 20 or 30 years, so it was the perfect storm. But I think we have addressed the farmers' concerns, and I'm not going to get ahead of the president, but I believe.
And I think this is what's interesting right there, right? She's got this big gotcha moment where she's going to talk to Scott Bessent about who soybean farmers are. And what do you say to the soybean farmers who are hurting? And he's like, I own a soybean farm. I actually have a soybean farm. I am a soybean farmer. He owns a soybean farm in North Dakota. So he doesn't need to be lectured by the liberal elites. Margaret Raddatz, by the way, tried to tell him. She said, well, Trump's all excited that he's going to go meet with President Xi of China. He's going to go meet him. It'll be the first time he's met him. He tries to say that he has a good relationship. This is going to be the first time he's met him. But he also says he has a good relationship with Putin, and he doesn't. Scott Bessent was like, well, he's met him before. Like, when he was president before. It's the first time he's met him this term, but they know each other. They talk. And so the pushback that we're getting to these liberal narratives, the pushback is so, so important. And it's in such stark contrast to what would happen if a Republican were in office. And I'll give you the last example of Senator Chris Murphy. Chris Murphy, this is him asked to whether or not he still agrees with his perspective that Graham Plattner is the right kind of person that belongs in the U.S. Senate. Cut number 26.
Ask you about the Maine Senate race, because earlier this month you called Maine Senate candidate Graham Plattner impressive. But since then, obviously, a lot about him has come out, including the fact that he had a Totenkopf, which is a skull head. It's the Nazi emblem for the SS. He had one of those tattooed on his chest. He's denied that he knew what the tattoo meant until recently, but CNN did find several times he discussed the Totenkopf emblem in recent years and months. Do you still think Plattner is impressive?
Yeah, I saw that reporting. I think I'm meeting with him
this upcoming week. So I'm certainly interested to hear from him about it. I mean, anytime you see something like that, you scratch your head. I've also listened to him talk about, the difficult time that he went through in his life. And frankly, it's not unfamiliar to a lot of soldiers who came back from service and had a very difficult time.
Okay, that's all I need to hear. Listen. Number one, the fact that his staffers, after this guy was revealed for having a Nazi tattoo and that he knew about it, the fact that they let their boss, Senator Chris Murphy, have a meeting with this candidate after that scandal, those staffers are not doing their job. But number two, the fact that he's having the meeting still, what does that tell you? It tells you that Chris Murphy is trying to align himself with that part. He sees blood in the water for Chuck Schumer, and he's positioning himself to run and challenge Chuck Schumer. Okay? That's really important. Those two things, bad staffing and that he's doing it anyway, means he's going to challenge Chuck Schumer. But here's what I really care about. If this were a Republican, would Chris Murphy be saying, oh, I understand a lot of people went through a lot. PTSD. This happens in the culture. We need to have sensitivity to it. No. They would be burning their house down, salting the earth so that nothing could ever grow from it again. The cancel culture on the left knows no bounds except when it comes to one of their own. 844-500-4242. Let's take one call. Let's go and talk to Mike. Mike, you're on the Grace Curley Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne.
Well, as a retired Marine, I can tell you this doesn't add up. You know, number one, if you notice, this is a national story now. And we haven't heard from one guy that has served in his unit to stand up for him, which tells me he was probably an outsider in his unit. Number two, look, units go in and get tattoos all the time. They usually put on the tattoo of their unit they're in. I think, and I'm going to tell you, I'm willing to bet you, while he was in the Marine Corps, he hid this tattoo as much as he could. Because I'll tell you, if the Marine Corps found this tattoo on him, he would have been bounced the hell out. So I don't know what's going on, but something strange that none of the guys in the unit have stepped forward to at least defend him and say, well, we all got him. We had no idea what they were.
Yeah. No, you got a big point. And thanks for the call, Gunny. I think that's exactly right. I think we're going to find out that this story doesn't check out. And I think he's going to be open to a lot more criticism as it goes on. We've said it before and we'll say it again. Dr. Houghton of Perfect Smiles is a superb architect. When it comes to dentistry, he's the best at what he does. He fixes your teeth, your smile, but what he really does is to build the self-confidence of his patients. When you have a smile that you're proud of, it builds confidence in your professional life and your personal life. The better you look, the better you feel, and that helps every aspect of your life, every interaction you have daily. If you're not afraid to smile, every other part of life becomes so much easier. Have you thought about Perfect Smiles for years but never called? Take the first step towards a renewed sense of self-confidence and visit Dr. Houghton. Take care of yourself. You deserve it. Call Perfect Smiles in Nashua, New Hampshire. They're conveniently located off Route 3 and have plenty of parking. You can reach them at PerfectSmiles.com. That's PerfectSmiles.com. Change your smile. Change your life. It's time for the car crossover when we come back. This is the Grace Curley Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne.
And I never heard of that fella you said, what's his name? Arnold Hitler?
The Grace Curley Show will return. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Today's car crossover is brought to you by Tux Trucks. The snowflakes are coming. The snowflakes are coming. Push them away with a Fisher plow from Tux Trucks GMC in Hudson, Mass. Tux Trucks has the full line of Fisher products, including parts, and they service Fisher plows. Learn more at TuxTrucksGMC.com. Howie, in breaking news, Graham Plattner's new campaign manager leaves the operation after less than a week on the job. He says that he just found out that he has a new baby coming, and so he can't give 100% to Graham Plattner's campaign. Is this yet the death knell for this socialist candidate?
The thing that amuses me most, you know, maybe it's just me because I went to prep school, but the fact is that he claims to be a working class hero, and he went to Hotchkiss. Hotchkiss, known in the prep school community as Klotchkiss in Connecticut. I mean, it's $75,000 a year, and he's a working class hero. He is such a pluperfect fraud, so perfect for the Democrat Party in Maine or anywhere else for that matter.
Part of how we knew that he wasn't a working class hero, Howie, is, do you know what Mainers call an oyster farmer or an oyster fisherman?
What? Tell me.
Nothing. We don't have a term for it. It's not a thing. Like, yeah, there are people that catch oysters and do it, but that's not really, like, that's not a man of the people thing. It's this created fiction. I'm sure he does it. I'm sure that he has some, like, it's kind of the same way that Shelley Pingree calls herself an organic farmer. Like, it's this invented identity meant to make yourself seem relatable. It's like if we were to call Scott Bessin, like, he's a soybean farmer, but is that really who he is?
No, yeah, I mean, what I've also been told is that his mother has some high end restaurant somewhere, and that he just grows the oysters for her restaurant.
I mean, that would make more sense. That would be believable. He could call yourself like a family farm to table restaurant guy, right? Like, there are things that you can do that are actually true and authentic. But these people, they just think the American people are so stupid that they're not gonna ever catch on and be any of the wiser. They think they can bamboozle them.
Well, the first time I read about this guy, they said he's running and he has tattoos. And I didn't even know that the Nazi tattoo was like a month away from breaking through. But I just knew that the fact that he had tattoos was BS. I mean, the Wall Street Journal today is talking about Jared Golden. And you know what they mentioned? The tattoos.
Yeah.
This is what they think. If you have a tattoo, You must be relatable. You must have, you know, hung out at a truck stop.
Paula Quinn tried to run an ad criticizing Jared Golden for his tattoos, and they found out that it helped him. So I'm guessing that's why they're doing it. Changing gears, but staying on this inauthenticity, Howie. I don't know if you saw Kathy Hochul last night at the Zoran Mamdani rally. She seemed a little bit like a fish out of water, and they kind of booed her off. What do you think that whole thing, the embrace by Hochul and Hakeem Jeffries and the establishment figures of Zoran Mamdani, what do you think that means for the Democrat civil war?
It just means to me that she's like the Kerensky, the White Russians, you know, as the Bolsheviks tighten their control. Don't you get that vibe? I mean, she somehow bizarrely mentioned the Buffalo Bills, you know, and I guess her husband, you know, was part of the tax money payoff to the Buffalo Bills when they got their new stadium. I mean, who the hell in New York cares about the Buffalo Bills, in New York City cares about the Buffalo Bills?
Yeah, but that has to be one of those like upstate Western New York, like chip on your shoulder that you're not from Manhattan, right? That you've got to remind people that Buffalo is
Queens. You're at a New York City rally, you know, gee, bite your tongue. You know, if I go to Caribou, I'm not going to mention I'm born in Portland, right? I mean, that's, you know, it's just one of those things.
Unless you're trying to get them to boo you. I think that's you have to like read the room and know, but that's the thing. I think that, you know, it's so funny to see her, you know, obviously she only came to power because Cuomo was kicked to the curb, but you can see that she doesn't understand politics. She can't read the room. She doesn't know the moment. The Howie Carr Show is next. This has been The Grace Curley Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne.